Hi, my name is Raghav Pandey, and welcome back to The Franchise. Every 4 years, we are reintroduced to a set of sports that escape our collective memory. No one really hears about them, much less the protagonists who compete against each other in these sports. They are all, in a sense, waiting for the Olympics to come around, when the world, devoid of the more popular and commercial variants, give these sports their due. In the lead-up to the Olympics, these athletes suddenly find the backing of major sponsors and find the media thronging to capture their preparation, lifting expectations to unreasonable heights at times, which more often than not prove to be detrimental. Swimming is one such sport, and in 2008, the weight of said unreasonable expectation laid heavy on one man and what he would be able to achieve at the Beijing Games. Swimming has proved to be a major battleground for Olympic heavyweights, a discipline which follows the faster, stronger, better philosophy of sports has been the stage of much theater and bitter rivalries in the editions gone past. Its importance, medal count-wise, of who comes out on top eventually, allows it to hog the limelight and capture our attention as its marquee events take place. There is nothing serene about the blue water. Rather, the usual red dividers, which dictate one's lanes, lend the more appropriate color to what usually unfolds. Aggression, hostility, and a combined power output that could possibly operate a small city. USA, being one of these heavyweights, has long concentrated on swimming alongside athletics to bolster their medal count at the Games. With nearly half of the gold medals that have been on offer for swimming throughout the history of the Olympics being amassed by the Americans, there was no doubt about which country dominated the battle in the water. Since the turn of the century, Michael Phelps had managed to single-handedly raise this domination to stratospheric levels. And the 8 Olympic medals at Beijing 2008 being the apogee of it all. But this episode is not about him. Rather, it's about one of those people who, unlike Phelps, had very little going for him physiologically, and neither had the kind or amount of success that would make him a household name beyond his neighborhood. But for a moment in time, he had transcended the realm of possibility, which had in turn allowed the greatest individual achievement in the sport to actually take place. Jason Lezak was born into a humble Jewish family in Irvine, California, and had attended UC Santa Barbara, where he chose swimming as his sport to turn pro in. Unlike the greatest names in the sport, Lezak solely chose freestyle over short distances as the variant he would compete in. The idea being to limit the variety of preparation required and find himself a niche in the USA swimming teams. Something specific to chase with a focus that would allow him to go stroke to stroke with the best. His journey to being a constant for USA swimming started at the 1999 Pan Pacific Championships, where already as a relative unknown in the world of swimming, he nearly chased down the legendary Ian Thorpe of Australia in the final leg of the 4-in-200-meter freestyle relay. The experience and the result had made it real for him. And the work and effort started to follow, with Lezak fighting his way into the relay teams for the USA at the 2000 Sydney Olympics. His understated demeanor didn't match that of his teammates, as the hype around the 4-in-200-meter freestyle relay had reached fever pitch, with his teammate Gary Hall Jr. instigating the favorites Australians by mentioning that the USA was likely to smash them like guitars. In what was the most followed event of the swimming program at Sydney, Lezak seemed like an innocent bystander, swimming a leg that validated his selection in the lineup, but one that was not enough to secure the gold over the Australians. An effort along with the seconds during the heats for the medley relay earned Lezak his first of 4 golds that he would receive over his long Olympic career. But as the event ended and Lezak made his way back home, there was no one looking to sit down with him and know more about what life had been for him till he became an Olympic champion. This was a function of being in a country having an embarrassment of riches when it comes to swimming talent, and accompanied by the fact that with so many gold medals being dispensed in swimming, there's something like a valued gold medal. The medals which Lezak won for the relays did not count for much in the nation's ruthless eyes, with there being no individual success to actually accompany them. This was in contrast to Gary Hall, who, despite being the prime reason for a fired-up Australian team, was the talk of the town as the contingent touched down, thanks to his success in the 50 and 100-meter freestyle events as well. Life for Lezak was much the same after his Olympic outing in Sydney, and the lull which follows for athletes of these Olympic sports was one for him to dwell in as well. The consistency in performance continued to have him in the relay swimming teams in the Continental and World Championships, and an improvement individually had him actually qualify for the individual 50 and 100-meter freestyle events at Athens in 2004. However, the story remained much the same. Success in the relays, but nothing to show for his bash in the individual events. The medals were racking up for Lezak, but all that is supposed to accompany his success escaped him. The sponsors had decided to invest in other younger talents like Phelps and back those who were winning the precious medals individually. In 2006, left without a coach, sponsors, and at the age of 30, many an individual would have actually called time on their careers. Freestyle speedsters had a short shelf life, and very few had enough in their tanks to actually compete at 3 Olympic Games. But Lezak decided to soldier on and began coaching himself and proved by qualifying for his 3rd Olympic Games in 2008 that he had the discipline to train daily without a team or with a trainer by his side. Coming in at the age of 32, the swimming contingent bestowed him with the honor of being a captain, a recognition fitting for the experience he possessed and some compensation for the lack of appreciation that he had otherwise received. However, there was no doubt what the story was leading into Beijing 2008. It was Michael Phelps attempting to become the first man to win 8 Olympic golds in a single edition, and thus dethroning Mark Spitz in the process. The swimming program at Beijing had the 8 events in which Phelps was about to take part, earmarked for international focus. The narrative around pushing the limits of what was possible at a swimming meet made it must-see TV, putting the spotlight on the relays and his teammates in those events as well. At points throughout his quest, Phelps would have to cede control of his destiny to his teammates, who as a result were facing the unnerving ask of having to win at all costs. Their efforts were as much for Phelps as they were for themselves. You certainly did not want to be the reason that prevented Phelps from having sole ownership of the crown that still for now rested on Mark Spitz's crumpet. Phelps began his Olympics as planned, with a smashing victory in the 400-meter individual medley. His time of 4 minutes 3.84 seconds remains the fastest in history by more than a second. It was one of those editions of the Games where records were there to be broken. And a few days in, with certain athletes taking center stage, it was a given that they would be broken as well. Phelps in the pool was one such situation, where history and the times that had been set by himself and mere mortals weren't relevant anymore. But it could have all come crashing down on day 2, and it should have. In France through 2006 and 2007, something special was brewing in the pool, with suddenly world beaters arising in the freestyle division. Coming up together meant that the competition amongst them ensured that each of them was forced to improve continually in order to have a chance of being part of a contingent which was already being touted to sweep the freestyle events at the Olympics. A country which wasn't particularly known for its prowess in these events were making sizable splashes in the pool during the European Championships, big enough for the usual favorites of the freestyle relay event across the Atlantic to sit up and take notice. Between Livaux, Guillot, Bousquet and Bernard, the French had the fastest group of men that had ever been assembled by a single country, ready to strike with the usual panache and confidence that you would expect the French to carry. The 4x200m freestyle relay at the Olympics was theirs to lose. In the pre-Olympics conference, though, this confidence turned to arrogance. Much like Gary Hall Jr. from Sydney in 2000, Alain Bernard from France suggested, and I quote, "The Americans, we're going to smash them. That's what we came here for," before going on to declare himself as the favorite for his individual events. If Phelps' possible achievement had been a strong reason for his teammates to spark a flame within themselves, Bernard's comments were equivalent to putting wood on that same flame. But the arrogance and comments weren't actually misplaced. It would need the best race of each of the four US swimmers and an average race for the French for this to even be a close encounter. Years later, when it was all said and done, the gap between these two teams on that day was even more obvious. The French in their team had swimmers who had hit times to feature in the top 10 all-time of the 50 or 100 meters, while the US did not have a single individual from their group of four in that same elite bracket. The heats for the freestyle relay featured the B teams from the US, Australia, and France. Rest was a key factor for the best in the pool to give it their all when the time came. Lizak, who had been part of these B teams of successful gold-winning contingents in the past, knew all about it. The heats did not count for much apart from qualification. For many, this was the easiest way to get a medal at the Olympics. Being the sixth or seventh fastest in just your country gave you a chance to win a medal by racing in the heats. But those days for Lizak had long gone. He was now a stalwart of the relay teams and trusted with swimming the last anchor leg. For once, in terms of being rested for an event, he shared the liberties that were being extended to the great Michael Phelps. Such was the sudden advancement in swimming gear and the electric atmosphere in the water cube at Beijing that even USA's B team managed to break the world record during the heats. Well, so had the French and Australians as well. The heats had progressed without any hiccups. Unlike the equivalent relay in athletics, there is no real uncertainty which is created between participants. No baton to fumble, so to say. The ability of each swimmer individually ties in coherently to determine the overall time of the team and the outcome. The fastest times in the heats for the Americans and the French meant that they would be in adjacent lanes in the center of the swimming pool as the final rolled in. Lizak had lived the recent history of this event, and by American standards, it was a sour one. The Australians and the unlikely South Africans had pipped them in the previous two editions of the Games, and here were the French poised to do so again. It was win or bust. There was no two ways about it. There wasn't a seat available for you at the water cube if Phelps was involved, and with all the talk and tension surrounding this particular relay, there were people hanging about in the aisles as well, okay, to just get a glimpse at a speck of blue over their compatriots' shoulders. Phelps would lead the USA off. He had been in the pool only an hour earlier to swim the heat for his individual event, But normal human physiology didn't apply to him. With lactate levels absurdly low after record-breaking swims, Phelps wasn't going to be deterred by hitting the water so soon, especially with all the adrenaline buildup that the French and their comments had provided him and his teammates as well. Phelps hit the pool along with Livor from France. Even the great man was supposed to come second in this mini individual race. But surprisingly, by bringing in his experience of having been there and done that, Phelps nudged ahead and stayed there, hitting the wall first before the seconds of the two teams jumped in. The lead he built up was maintained to a certain extent by Garrett Weber-Gale, who matched Francis Guillot for time. However, this was never going to be enough. The French had Bousquet followed by Bernard in line. Bousquet had just swum the fastest relay split ever at 46.63 seconds in the heats, while Bernard was the record holder at the 100 meters. As the third man for both teams jumped in, the gulf in quality became apparent. 25 meters in, and the lead built up over two legs had vanished. Bousquet blazed ahead and uncannily repeated his performance of 46.63 seconds to equal the fastest split which he had just set during the heats, giving the world record holder in Alain Bernard more than half a second over the aging Jason Lizak. Everybody knew what the outcome was going to be, and there was no point in denying the truth about what was unfolding. This was the stumbling block at which Phelps would trip, with no fault of his own. Until it wasn't.
But France has taken the lead up there in lane 5 over the United States. Alain Bernard awaits as the anchor guy, and Jason Lizak is going to have to make up some ground on Alain Bernard, who stands 6 feet 5 and can absolutely fly.
I just don't think they can do it, Dan. I mean, Jason Lizak has been there how many times in his career has he anchored this free relay and medley relay, but I just don't think he can do it. He's trying to ride that wave as much as possible.
Bernard is pulling away from him.
Lizak, look at the world record line.
A three-time Olympian. World record is absolutely going to be shattered here. The United States trying to hang on a second. They should get the silver medal. Australia is in bronze territory right now, but Lizak is closing a little bit on Bernard. Can the veteran chase him down and pull off a shocker here?
Well, there's no doubt that he's tightening up.
Bernard is losing some ground. Here comes Lizak. Unbelievable at the end. He's done it. The U.S. has done it.
He did it.
A new world record. He did it. Phelps' hopes alive. 46.06 split for Lizak. What a clutch fast swim when they needed it. Who's talking now?
That might be the most incredible relay split I've ever seen in my entire life. 46 flat. Not only was that the fastest in history, it blew away the fastest in history.
46.06. In the situation that Lizak was in and the history that he had thus allowed to be made. It was the fastest relay split that had been swum by more than half a second and was way faster than any time that he had swam before or anyone else had for that matter. It just did not make sense. As the euphoria died down and the pictures moved away from the visually ecstatic Phelps, Lizak for once received the attention he had deserved all his career. His stupendous performance demanded it. He had entered the pool with an insurmountable mountain to climb, of facing a deficit against Bernard, and had somehow managed to overcome him. The French were shell-shocked, as were most people who had witnessed one of the greatest individual bursts the world had ever seen. The time that Lizak had swam was almost too good to be true. He had used all his experience to swim as close to Bernard as the lane separators would allow him to do so, and according to experts, was in prime drafting position in the returning 50 meters to put himself ahead at the end. But this was a theory. The bottom line was, as Lizak put it, that at that very moment, approaching the finish with 40 meters to go, he had never felt stronger, and that the waves of adrenaline had enabled the unlikely result. He, in the moment, had put his team before himself and somehow found an extra kick that no one knew existed, at least not within the 32-year-old Jason Lizak. The overall world record had been shattered by about 4 seconds, with five teams having broken it in the finals of the event. The French had finished an agonizing 0.08 seconds behind. Prior to the finals race, their order had been changed by the coaches an hour and a half before the race. And 8 years later, in an interview for the Olympic Channel, they still held that sudden change to blame. For Lizak, he knew all those months of preparation alone in the pools of Irvine, California, fighting to not be written off as a younger crop of swimmers came to the fore, had come to fruition. Motivated once again for a cause bigger than his personal glory, Lizak had wiped away years of disappointment in under a minute. Days later, in the individual 100 meters, Bernard won the event comfortably, upholding one of his pre-Olympic predictions. Lizak came third, and all was again logical and according to script in the swimming world. Phelps won his 8 gold medals, and the world had what it wanted. 4 years later, Lizak was back at the Olympics in London, and so was Bernard. Lizak, 36, and at the absolute end of his swimming career, and Bernard with his powers waning. Despite a simultaneous reduction in abilities, the possibility of an encore was mouth-watering. However, both the US and the French looked past them for the finals, one which was won by the French, reaching the top pedestal in the podium, somewhere they should have been 4 years earlier. Les Miserables, no more. Both Lizak and Bernard retired soon after London 2012, immortalizing their rivalry in Beijing 2008 and not diluting its value with subsequent clashes at the biggest stage. The value of Lizak's performance was almost always intrinsically linked to the overall achievement of Phelps at Beijing 2008, and hardly ever looked at in isolation for what it was. It had been nothing short of a miracle, a Bob Beamon-esque leap in the record books, untouched to this day. The love for the sport had kept him near the swimming scene, coaching the next generation of stars. But his demeanor, as always, had kept him in the shadows of whoever was the current talk of the swimming world. In any other nation, Lizak would be a household name, with facilities named after him and the nation's highest honors being bestowed. 2 bronze, 2 silver, and 4 gold medals was certainly not a bad haul. In the US, however, he was just another swimmer who represented the country, which is to say that he was unrecognized by most and hardly ever had a microphone thrusted at him for his opinions on matters pertaining to swimming or anything else. For a humble, soft-spoken giant from Irvine, California, it was as he had wanted it to be, though. Every few years, someone plays the clip of Rowdy Gaines' animated voice describing the closing moments of the relay in Beijing, and Lizak repeats what he had always said. It was a great team effort, and Phelps had nothing to thank him for. The truth, however, was that Phelps did. And a portion of all the love and adulation that he had received post-Beijing was in fact Lizak's. Maybe today, years later, if you see him switching flights or at the grocery store, repay him with a retelling of the moment, a fist bump, or a doffed hat, and see the man smile. Jason Lizak, the greatest team player in an individual sport.